from deep inside your audio device of choice.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's not every day, or every week, or every year, for goodness sake, that one finds oneself about 8 blocks away from a terrorist event. But that was my New Year's Eve and New Year's Day. Not that this is about me, but one of the salient facts about the French Quarter of New Orleans, which was not really covered by the massive coverage, is that it's really two different neighborhoods, two different areas. You have the tourist part, which you've seen if you've ever been to New Orleans. And then there's the hidden away residential part, which I'm not going to tell you how to find. We don't want you there. No, we want you there, but, you know, one at a time. Obviously, this guy, I'm not going to mention his name. His name should be forgotten as soon as possible. It's the least we can do. We remember the names of people we honor, so why wouldn't we forget the names of the people we dishonor? He came from Texas. Thank you, Governor Abbott. Governor Abbott was sending migrants from Texas to other cities recently. And this time he sent a Texan, born and bred. The motives, the psychology, all of that have been relentlessly poured over by the talking heads this week. But I have to share with you, ladies and gentlemen, the insight, dubious though it may be, of a local. Bourbon Street is not where we go. As I said, it's a tourist attraction. I don't think you go to the tourist attractions in any town that you live in. Maybe occasionally, but not regularly. And it has been the site of attractions over the years, throughout the year. It's not just one or two nights. It is a year-round attraction. And a few years ago, the city fathers and mothers, hey mom, decided that it would be a good idea to restrict the access of vehicular traffic to the streets, to Bourbon Street and its surroundings, for most of the popular events, just to, you know, keep cars from driving down the street and running down pedestrians. Something like that. So they put in metal bollards. These were mechanical things, barriers, that would rise up, not in rebellion, but just in defiance, and keep you from driving your car into or around Bourbon Street during those events. Well, it's New Orleans, ladies and gentlemen. It's a 300-year-old city. There are infrastructure challenges wherever you look. The, of course, the well-known stuff that happened almost 20 years ago in the wake of the Katrina experience, but other things too. The city's water pumping system, having nothing to do with the Army Corps of Engineers, this is the system that keeps the city dry after a rainstorm. It's so good, or it has been so good, the pumps have been so good, the Dutch came over in 1953 to take a look at them because they'd had flooding and they wanted to look at the best pumps around. And they were in New Orleans. But the system that runs the pumps is almost a century old, and it runs on a variety of electricity that don't exist anymore. 25 watts. So everything that runs that system has to be run through transformers to get it to that ancient form of electricity. That has not been fixed. Could be. Would take millions, you know, maybe billions. There, as I say, other infrastructure challenges. But this one, This one is relatively minor. The bollards weren't working. They weren't going up or staying up. So, yeah, the city decided to repair them or replace them. There was federal money that sprang from either the Katrina thing or the Deepwater Horizon thing. One of those things. And the city set a schedule for completion of the repair or replacement of those bollards. The date set for completion of the job was the date of the Super Bowl game. A month and a week away. Now, they knew that the Sugar Bowl was going to be played on New Year's Day and that New Year's Eve was a big event. I think they've heard that, maybe read about it. Maybe Anderson Cooper shared something with him about that. But the schedule didn't call for repairing and replacing those protective machines until the Super Bowl. It's almost as if when you host a Super Bowl game, the Super Bowl runs your city. And had that system been repaired and replaced on a more timely schedule, it's reasonable to assume fewer people would have died this week. Hello, welcome to the show.
Don't waste your time being angry when a moment's better with a smile. If you feel your time's been wasted here for a while. Standing at the bus stop, just across from crowds, waiting for that driver to take me to my heavenly house. I'll see you there. What will they wear? Will the band be playing? What will the people be saying? Does your father lie there? Does your mother pray? I'm gonna put on my golden crown at the foot of Canal Street. Your father lies there.
at the foot of Canal Street.
From the home of the homeless, Santa Monica, California. Yeah, we got out a little late, but we did get out. We'll be back. You know that. I'm Harry Shearer. Welcome you to this edition of the show. And now, ladies and gentlemen.
He's not a general.
He commands no troops.
He's not an inspector.
He peeks at no stoops.
He's an inspector general.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, the Afghanistan war, remember that? Ask your dad. Has faded, has just dropped down the memory hole where everything in this country goes, except for Donald Trump's accusations about the failure of the withdrawal from Afghanistan. Like that was the worst thing that happened there? I think not. And I have somebody who thinks not, too. He's the Inspector General for Afghan Reconstruction, John Sopko. You have heard his reports summarized on this program for years to no effect. Now he has written pretty much like an exit interview statement about that adventure. The collapse of the U.S.-backed government in Afghanistan on October 15th, 2021, revealed what little American lives and money had purchased over 20 years there. It also had laid bare a gaping disconnect between reality and what senior U.S. officials had been telling Americans for decades, that success was just around the corner. Let me intervene here for a moment based on that paragraph. I was old enough to be sentient during the Vietnam War days and recalled that the United States government was telling us, those of us who were eligible for the draft, ask your dad, as well as everybody else. Oh, the North Vietnamese are just pawns of the Chinese. This is a part of Chinese attempts to take over Asia, if not more. And we had to fight them there, or we wouldn't fight them here. And hey, but the main point was a pawn of China, like China ran Vietnam. You know, it was a bigger country. And it was only years later that I had the opportunity to go to Vietnam, not in uniform, interestingly, and to meet some Vietnamese people and to ask them, first of all, seemed to me the most salient question, do you hate the Americans? Do you hate the U.S.? And their answer surprised me. Hate you? You guys were only here for 50 years. The French were here for 500 years. We really hate them. And the people we really hate are the Chinese. So, yeah, the lying about what's going on in a war far away, it ain't new. Back to John Sopko's summary. Quote, as the Special Inspector General for Afghanistan Reconstruction since 2012, my staff and I have audited and investigated U.S. programs and spending to rebuild Afghanistan, a mission that it was hoped would turn a theocratic, tribal-based graveyard of empires into a modern liberal democracy. In hundreds of reports over the last 12 years, we have detailed a long list of systemic problems. The U.S. government struggled to carry out a coherent strategy, fostered overly ambitious expectations, started unsustainable projects, and did not understand the country or the people. That would be a big one. American agencies measured success not by what they accomplished, but by dollars spent or checklists of completed tasks. As our own agency winds down and we prepare to release our final report this year, says Sopko, we raise a fundamental and too rarely asked question. Why did so many senior officials tell Congress and the public, year after year, that success was on the horizon when they knew otherwise? For two decades, officials publicly asserted that continuing the mission in Afghanistan was essential to national interests, until eventually two presidents, Donald Trump and Joe Biden, concluded that it was not. News of Inspectors General, ladies and gentlemen. Copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And now, news of the godly. News of more people you can really believe. Guardian Insurance, that's an insurance company in Canada, has secured a significant legal victory in a case against the Roman Catholic Archdiocese of St. John's, Newfoundland. I've been there. It got a court ruling that the insurer is not obligated to cover settlements for historic sexual abuse claims. Oops. According to a report from the International Comparative Legal Guides, the Newfoundland and Labrador Supreme Court declared a policy issue, declared that a policy issued in the 1980s was void due to the archdiocese's failure to disclose known incidents of sexual abuse by clergy, which was deemed, quote, fraudulent misrepresentation, unquote. Not just the normal kind of misrepresentation. We can tolerate that, right? The decision issued by Justice late last year adds further financial strain to the Archdiocese, which has been under bankruptcy protection since 2021. That's some protection. The church has been liquidating assets to meet the $104 million in settlement obligations. It's just raised $44 million to date. You could sell the Pope. I don't know if you can sell the Pope. Central to the court's findings was evidence that the Roman Catholic Episcopal Corporation of St. John's deliberately withheld critical information about clergy abuse when applying for and renewing insurance policies with the insurance company. Notably, the Archdiocese failed to disclose allegations against, here's another memorable name, Father James Hickey. Father James Hickey, a priest later convicted on 20 counts of sexual violence against minors. The court reviewed a 2011 affidavit from Father Ronald McIntyre, which detailed a 1974 report of Hickey's misconduct to church leadership, despite assurances from the Monsignor that the issue would be addressed. No action was taken to prevent further abuse, according to the report. The court heard that at least six senior clergy members, including Archbishop Alphonsus Penny, were aware of Hickey's behavior before the issuance of the policy. The insurance company argued that the nondisclosure invalidated the policy, a claim bolstered by expert testimony. And, pointing to the perils of pastoral pessimism, the aforementioned Pope Francis urged the congregation of teaching sisters this week to cultivate joy in their ministry, warning them that stern countenances drive people away from the faith. Not the abuse and not the thing, but, you know, stern countenances. Quote, many times in my life, I've encountered nuns with a vinegar face, says the Pope. Nice choice of words. He has a way with words. And this is not friendly. This is not something that helps to attract people, he said. Well, bikinis help to attract people. Come on. Get out of the habit. And here's a name from the recent past. The criminal sexual assault case against former Roman Catholic Cardinal Theodore McCarrick. He was big in Washington, D.C. area. That criminal sexual assault trial case will remain open, but suspended until his death. A judge ruled the case would not be dismissed. McCarrick, ex-Archbishop of D.C., was defrocked by the Pope 5 years ago after an internal Vatican investigation determined he sexually molested adults as well as children. Well, a little variety in the diet never hurt anybody. He was charged in Wisconsin a couple years ago with one count of fourth degree sexual assault for an incident that occurred 30, 40 years ago in April. He's now 94. Good on you, babe. The charge stems from a complaint which alleges McCarrick engaged in repeated sexual abuse of the victim over time, including the charged incident that involved the alleged fondling of the victim's genitals while staying as a guest at a residence. McCarrick was found to be not competent to stand trial, meaning he couldn't understand the court proceedings or assist in his own defense. As a result, the case had been on hold. Maybe they could have done some drawings to help him. During a review hearing this week, the judge denied a defense request to dismiss the case, saying that's not allowed under the competency statute. However, the court will not set any further review on the matter, and it will remain in suspended state until the defendant passes away. Almost like the thing they did with Trump this week, except for the passing away part. McCarrick did not participate in the hearing, according to court records. I guess he was reading or writing or snoozing. The once powerful American prelate also faced charges that he abused a teenage boy at a wedding reception at Wesley College a bunch of years ago. A Massachusetts judge ruled a couple of years ago that case is dismissed because he, McCarrick, not the judge, is experiencing dementia. And it is one hell of an experience. I wouldn't know, but I hear. I hear tell. News of the godly, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Now, I talked at the beginning of the program about one city that has new in its name. And I feel it's incumbent upon me to just in passing mention another that has a similar first name, New York. This program has been on the air in New York City on the station whose call letters I forget now for a long time. And this week they announced to our syndicator that they were canceling the program. No real explanation, no opportunity for me to say goodbye. But that's radio. Radio, you know, you can say goodbye on TV. You can say goodbye in print. But when they fire you in radio, you are depersoned. You couldn't say goodbye because you don't exist in that world anymore. The reason given was that they have two stations, an AM and an FM. Ask your dad. And they had different programming. The show was on the AM station. And they decided they wanted the programming to be the same on both stations. You know, own two stations, just have one set of programs. That doesn't seem greedy, does it? Somebody else could program that station differently. Would be different. So, but no. So, if you know anybody in New York... send your condolences. From Southern California, this is Liz Show. One thing about New York, they forgive. They seem to be. In 2016, October of 2016, Donald Trump, I'm sorry, I did say the name, spoke at a Catholic Charities white tie dinner, Al Smith dinner it's called, and every election year, the two presidential candidates show up and do kind of, you know, roasty, jokey speeches, and she showed up and he showed up. And this was on television. This was on nationwide television. I think it was C-SPAN, but I think it was also on CNN. Remember CNN? And he gets up to speak, and the entire room boos him. Not with a Z. And you know, he had a history in New York of being kind of the local loudmouth. The local elite real estate community never liked him. That was sort of what was represented on that dais that day. Well, now things have changed. He's been reelected, and he's gone back to New York. He left New York, of course, after all that, mainly because of taxes. Well, you know, if you don't pay taxes, why should you? But anyway, he came back to New York, not to live, but to receive plaudits from the city at Madison Square Garden and a couple other events. So they forgive. So maybe one year, when I've committed 34 felonies, I'll be back on the air in New York. But one thing about Donald Trump that seems to be ambient in the air this time around is the conviction on the part of the strategists and the consultants and the opinionators and the volumators that this time he's going to do what he says he's going to do, which, gee, is an not, you know, overly careful observer of his behavior over the years, I would risk saying that that's wildly out of character. So, for an example, all of the pledges that he's made during the campaign and since about what he's going to do on day one.
With a stroke of my pen, on day one, we're going to stop the transgender lunacy. And I will sign executive orders to end child sexual mutilation. And we will keep men out of women's sports. And that will likewise be done on day one. Should I do day one, day two, or day three? How about day one, right? Starting on day one, I will approve new drilling, new pipelines, new refineries, new power plants, new reactors. Starting on day one, we will end inflation. We have to do the tariffs. On my first day back in the Oval Office, I will sign a historic slate of executive orders to close our border to illegal aliens and stop the invasion of our country. And on that same day, we will begin the largest deportation operation in American history. I will sign day one orders to end all Biden restrictions on energy production, terminate his insane electric vehicle mandate.
I've got a to-do list as long as my tie. No my tie needed, I'm totally dry. I've got some news you'll be glad you receive. Just try to follow, it's part of the weave. Inauguration Day will make us all proud when we attract an unbelievable crowd. World leaders, wrestlers, and maybe my wife will mark the start of an unbelievable life. No, it won't be sudden like shooting a ray gun. It just might be later than day one. No, YMCA isn't all about gay fun. You can bet none of that happens on day one. Maybe not till summer, maybe not till the fall. Price of food drops slowly, if even at all. Sure, I promise a big hostage pardon, but I'll be promising in the Rose Garden. I'd stop the war with Russia and Ukraine, or maybe I'd just call and complain. The migrants will be swiftly deported, might not get started, but it will be reported. Love to get everything on my inbound tray done. It'll take a while till we get to day one. The world would look brighter than the midday May sun. But June 17th might turn out to be day one.
Since I took a left and moved out to the coast, from time to time I find myself engrossed with other erstwhile denizens of the apple. While we sit around and take L.A. to task, there's a question someone's bound to ask. And with this complex question, we must grapple. Do you miss New York? The anger, the action. Does this laid-back lifestyle lack a certain satisfaction? Do you ever burn to pack up and return to the thick of it? Are you really sick of it? As you always say, do you miss the pace? The rat race, the racket. And if you had to face it now, do you still think you could hack it? When you're back in town for a quick look around, how is it? Does it feel like home, or just another nice place to visit? And were those halcyon days just a youthful phase you outgrew? Tell me, do you miss New York? Do you miss New York? Do you miss the strain, the traffic, the tension? Do you view your new terrain with a touch of condescension? And on this quiet street, is it really as sweet as it seems out here? Do you dream your dreams out here? Or is that passé? Do you miss the scene, the frenzy, the faces? And did you trade the whole parade for a pair of parking places? And if you had the choice, you still choose to do it all again? Do you find yourself in line to see Annie Hall again. And do you ever run into that guy who used to be you? Tell me, do you miss New York? Me too. Me too.
That makes one of us, babe. Ladies and gentlemen, I mentioned earlier in the program, Texas Governor Abbott, Greg Abbott to you, Costello to me, he had a little gaffe this week after former President Jimmy Carter died at 100 years old. Several politicians shared condolences, including Texas Governor Abbott. His statement extended condolences to Rosalynn Carter. She ain't here no more. The former First Lady died in 2023 at the Carter family home in Plains. That's a long enough time to look it up. Governor Abbott's office released a full statement shortly after news of the passing of the late president. In the statement, Abbott said, "Americans owe Carter gratitude for his service as the 39th president of the United States, extended prayers and condolences to the entire Carter family." He mistakenly extended condolences to Carter's late wife. He later posted an updated statement to X, hi Elon, offering condolences to the entire Carter family. So I hope Johnny Cash will be happy to hear that. And speaking of mistaken celebrities, I've always thought, ladies and gentlemen, that it would be peculiar if a newscaster, a renowned newscaster, a respected newscaster, a serious newscaster, spent 364 days on the air reporting, discussing serious events in the world, and spent one night on television getting drunk with a gay pal. You know who I'm talking about. Here he is.
I'm not going to let you do this on this. All right. It's so stupid. It's really so stupid.
Take it back in. He was, of course, co-hosting New Year's Eve with Andy Cohen. The dramatic contrast that I'd always had in my head was made clear when just hours later he appeared on another New Year's Eve site, the site of the horrific thing in New Orleans, from Times Square to New Orleans. He took a flight, but on the New Year's Eve telecast, the show's hosts, both Anderson Cooper and Andy Cohen, had Diplo on as one of their guests. Cohen asked Diplo, "What's the most conventional place you've done LSD?" To which Diplo said with a laugh, "Right now, I did some on the helicopter on the way here." He's on CNN, and he's on LSD. Diplo was laughing. He added, "I'm not even lying." C- Cooper instantly broke down laughing. Imagine that. That and that. Cohen, who was in shock, commented to Diplo, "You're tripping right now?" And Diplo replied, "Yeah, but it's like a flight trip. It's like a light trip, sorry." He noted how he was microdosing, but also could have macrodosed earlier in the day. After the interview, Cooper, according to the Hollywood Reporter, shared his admiration for the DJ. Quote, "I wish I was Diplo. I gotta say, I just think he has a cool lifestyle, a fun, cool lifestyle. Can you imagine his lifestyle? I'm Diplo, I do things." Cohen then asked Cooper if he followed Diplo on Instagram. Although he isn't, Cooper insists he's gonna now. Quote, "I'm absolutely gonna start. I mean, I feel bad about my own boring life compared to Diplo's. He's got helicopters and he's like doing things. He did like four shots while we were talking." Unquote. The most trusted name in giggling. And now, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Dateline Taipei, Taiwan. McDonald's issued an apology this week to the family of a 17-year-old former employee who killed himself in November last year after allegedly being coerced into sex with a supervisor at the fast food restaurant over a year-long period. What did the supervisor think he was, a priest? "In this incident, we failed to take preventive action before it happened. The handling was not timely nor comprehensive enough," said the fast food restaurant in a statement. McDonald's Taiwan once again expresses its sincerest apology to the victim and her family. The company said it had no motive or intention to guide the investigation it conducted after the teenage employee made allegations against her supervisor. The company's statement came hours after the father of the deceased former employee complained that the company had not yet said sorry to his family. Well, that's all fixed. Dateline Mesa County, Colorado, State Representative Matt Soper is apologizing for a social message in which he celebrated the recent death of former President Jimmy Carter. Who does he think he is, Greg Abbott? Soper said in the now-deleted post, quote, "Opened a bottle of champagne tonight. The world is rid of a despot. I thank God he finally called Carter home, the worst president in the history of the U.S. We are still recovering. He destroyed the U.S. in such a way that even the fourth generation is still suffering." Unquote. State Representative Matt Soper of Colorado. Soper, but maybe not sober, in a shared statement sent to a news facility in Colorado, he said he quickly deleted the post and said it was tasteless and heartless. Quote, "My tweet was in poor taste, and while I was not a fan of former President Carter, expressing the sentiments I did, I am very sorry for and apologize to the people of Colorado. I've also sent an apology to the Carter family and made a donation to the Carter Foundation." That'll do her. Book tracking app Fable will remove its popular AI features after the platform generated some reader summaries that were offensive to race, gender, sexuality, and disability. Fable, it's a company that does annual reading summaries, similar in style to Spotify Wrapped. No idea either. Are intended to be a, quote, "playful, fun way to celebrate readers' uniqueness," said Chris Gagliello, head of product, in a video. Tiana Trammell was among those who got a controversial summary when she unwrapped her annual synopsis. She found a summary that suggested that she, a black reader, should prioritize white authors more. Other users have posted their Fable reader summaries that said the disability narrative they read, quote, could earn an eye roll from a sloth, unquote, and disparaging rom-com reads as setting, quote, the bar for the cringe meter, unquote. It's a machine. The mouth on that machine. In the first of two videos posted to Fable's account, Galliel noted some changes to AI disclosure and opt-outs. Said the, quote, very bigoted reading summaries were a shock to the Fable team. Its use of AI was not meant to be a, quote, surprise or deceptive, unquote. He said the company had implemented safeguards and an offensive language filter. Clearly, in both cases, that failed this time around. So I think, as a company, we kind of underestimated how much work needs to be done to make sure that these AI models are doing this in a responsible, safe way. The head of community at Fable said changes are imminent. We take full ownership for this mistake and are deeply sorry that this happened at all. We have heard feedback from enough members of our community on the use of generative AI for certain features. We have made the decision to remove these features from our platform, effective immediately. And here's our chatbot, Twinkie. Twinkie, what do you think?
What a freaking tool. He probably smells like duck poop.
Good point. Speaking of the smart world, let's go into it for a moment.
It's a smart world after all. It's a smart world after all. It's a smart world after all. It's a smart, smart world.
Apple, you've heard of them, has filed a proposed settlement in California, suggesting it will pay $95 million to settle claims that Siri recorded owners' conversations without consent and allowed contractors to listen in. Class action case was brought after a whistleblower at Cupertino alleged in 2019 that Siri was listening in on audio conversations without the requisite "Hey Siri" command spoken or manually activating the voice assistant. Court filings reference that California requires consent from both parties for recordings. A small portion of Siri requests are analyzed to improve Siri and dictation, Apple said at the time. In 2018, Tim Cook said his team were marketing Apple big on privacy with the slogan, "Privacy, that's iPhone." This offer obviously didn't apply to its Chinese customers, observes the British tech journal The Register, tongue-in-cheek. After being questioned about privacy in a letter from Congress, Cook stated unequivocally, Apple doesn't collect audio recordings of users without consent. Far from requiring a clear, unambiguous trigger, as Apple claimed in its response to Congress, Siri can be activated by nearly anything, including the sound of a zipper or an individual raising their arms and speaking, says the complaint. Once activated, Siri records everything within range of the device's microphone and sends it to Apple's servers. Well, they're servers they serve. Some plaintiffs also reportedly claim that their data, harvested from their conversations, was used, say it with me now, to target ads, again without consent. One user claims they received an advert for a specific medication after discussing the topic with their doctor. Ask your doctor if he's recording you. The proposed class action could include anyone who owned a Siri-equipped device and was recorded without their consent since 2011. That's a lot of folks. So the payouts won't be huge. And, of course, Apple made $93.7 billion in net income last year, so $95 million. You know, that's Elon pocket change, as we call it. News of a smart world. And finally, ladies and gentlemen, some news of microplastics. Plastic waste pollution poses a critical environmental health risk. Food packaging is a major source of micro and nano plastics, exposure through ingestion, and inhalation. Well, You don't have to inhale. Just exhale all the time. And get rid of that vinegar face while you're at it. Researchers found that tea bags made from nylon, polypropylene, and cellulose release billions of plastic particles during the brewing process, with significant interactions observed between these particles and human intestinal cells, emphasizing an urgent need for stricter regulation. Plastic pollution from food packaging like tea bags releases billions of these particles, which can infiltrate human cells, highlighting serious health risks and the need for regulatory action. We'll be looking for that real soon. News of microplastics. That's it for this week's The Show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same few stations and on your audio device of choice whenever you want it. The email address for this program, your chance to get Cars Eye Talk t-shirts and the program's playlist all at harryshearer.com. Thanks to Pam Halstead and Thomas Walsh for help with today's program. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of WWNO New Orleans. Flagship station of the Change is Easy Radio Network. So long from the home of the homeless.